Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, May 9th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a terrorism trial begins in Minneapolis, and Jason Lewis wins the Republican endorsement in the 2nd District. Jury selection begins today in Minnesota's first ISIS trial involving multiple defendants. Tawa Lee Saikautau reports.
Abdi Rahman Daoud, Mohammed Farah, and Guled Omar are accused of conspiring to travel to Syria to join the terror group ISIS and commit murder abroad. Federal prosecutors plan to introduce about 26 witnesses during the three-week-long trial. Former U.S. Attorney Thomas Heffelfinger says this case might show how Somali youth were radicalized, but he says even if the defendants were to be found guilty, they don't represent the entire Somali community.
These are a small, small percentage of a very vibrant, law-abiding part of our broader community. The Muslim or Somali community in Minnesota, from my experience, are what they really want to do is raise their families here just like everybody else does.
Over the last few months, six other Twin Cities men have pleaded guilty to ISIS-related charges and are awaiting sentencing. Dua Lee Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Republicans have endorsed a candidate to succeed Republican Congressman John Klein. Former talk show host Jason Lewis secured the endorsement in the race for the state's 2nd congressional district over the weekend. He beat out David Gerson after 7 rounds of balloting at the party's district convention. Lewis says he's ready to take on the Democratic Party candidate Angie Craig.
We got too many people struggling all across the 2nd and Minnesota, and we need to fix that. And you're not going to get out of a tax and spend crisis by having more tax and spending. You're not going to get out of a debt crisis by having more debt. We've tried that. Hasn't worked. We need to put our faith in a little less government and more freedom.
Two other Republicans, Darlene Miller and John Howe, have said they may challenge Lewis for the GOP nomination in the primary in August. Democrats put out a statement shortly after Lewis wrapped up the endorsement, saying Lewis is too extreme, even for the Republican establishment. A bill that gives Minnesotans the right to control how their names, pictures, and likenesses are used is expected to be introduced in the state legislature today. The right of publicity guaranteed by the bill would exist even after death. The bill is being introduced by Chanhassen State Representative Joe Hoppe, whose district includes Paisley Park.
I've had people say, is it just prompted by the death of Prince? And essentially it is. And really what it's doing is it's attempting to recognize the right of publicity post-mortem.
If the measure becomes law, it would allow whoever controls Prince's estate to control the commercial use of his image. Right now, Bremer Trust is the estate's special administrator until it's determined who Prince's heirs are. The right of publicity law would apply to everybody in Minnesota, not just celebrities. And next, a story about blood-sucking pests that has nothing to do with politicians. Have you found any black-legged ticks crawling on your skin this spring? It's hard to miss them if you spend any time in the woods. They're doing really well in Minnesota. In just a few decades, they've spread to almost all forested areas of the state, and as they've spread, so has Lyme disease. Epidemiologist Dave Neitzel has been studying black-legged ticks for more than 3 decades. Last week, he visited a tick hotspot, Rice Creek Chain of Lakes Park Reserve in the Northern Metro. Reporter Lorna Benson tagged along as Neitzel collected specimens for research.
Spring is prime time for finding adult black-legged ticks, also known as deer ticks. And this urban forest, loaded with ferns, raspberry bushes, and some hazel, is a prime location.
We'll just take a little exploratory drag through here.
Dressed in white painter's coveralls with duct tape wrapped tightly around his ankles, Dave Neitzel drags a white canvas cloth over the forest floor. Fabric strips, weighted with fishing sinkers, dangle from the end of the cloth. This design allows some of the fabric to slip through the underbrush to the leaf litter below. That's where black-legged ticks spend most of their lives.
We've got a female, for sure.
Females have a distinctive reddish-orange band at the tail end of their dark brown bodies. The tick is hard to see, even on the white canvas. It's about the size of a sesame seed.
So she goes into a little vial.
Neitzel, who supervises the Minnesota Department of Health's Vector-Borne Disease Unit, was one of the first public health biologists in the country to study these ticks in their natural environment.
It is a cause that I've championed. I don't think that you can understand vector-borne disease risk unless you see what's going on out in the field and kind of pair that up with what's being reported from physicians, the cases that are being reported.
Minnesota's changing forest environment has been a boon for the black-legged tick. Timber harvesting has spawned younger forests with more vegetation growing at ground level. That's good for the ticks and for deer and mice, two of the primary hosts for the ticks. People have also changed their recreational habits, drawing them much closer to the ticks. Back in the 80s, very few people rode ATVs through wooded areas. Now that's just one of many recreational activities that occur regularly in forests.
Kids that play paintball in the woods, you know, that's something that people never did before, but now they do.
But what is clearly a success story for the black-legged tick has become a growing public health threat for people.
You know, Lyme disease cases showing up where we never saw Lyme disease before.
Minnesota has as many as 1,500 annual Lyme disease cases now. That compares to 200 in the 1990s.
Howdy.
Jenny Erickson waves to Neitzel from a nearby walking trail. His white outfit has captured her attention, and she wants to know what he's doing.
I'm the lead scientist that monitors mosquito and tick-transmitted diseases in the state.
Awesome.
Erickson is very familiar with black-legged ticks. She got Lyme disease last summer.
I never found the tick on me, but I got the bullseye.
Yeah.
Neitzel suspects she was probably bitten by a black-legged nymph. The immature ticks are a third of the size of the adults, which makes them almost impossible to see. Erickson's symptoms appeared last August, just a few weeks after peak nymph activity. It takes a few weeks for Lyme disease symptoms to develop. 9 months later, she's still not back to full health.
I have a ton of joint pain. Yes.
Okay.
And fatigue.
Yeah, that can take a while to resolve, that's for sure.
Yeah. There was a point where I needed to get, like, help getting out of bed and stuff like that.
Reducing the number of Lyme disease cases is a top priority for public health officials. But so far, there are no easy ways to control ticks. For example, spraying pesticides isn't very effective. It's hard for the chemical to reach the ticks where they live, deep in the leaf litter. While that research continues, Neitzel says his best advice is to wear protective clothes and repellents when out in wooded areas. And he'll keep tracking the expansion of the ticks' range so people know where they are. This spring, black-legged ticks have again turned up in a new location. They were discovered as far west as New Ulm. Neitzel says it's frustrating, but that's nature.
I know that they know not what they do. You know, they're just out and trying to feed and reproduce, and you know, there's not much thought that they have. But what impresses me is how successful they can be.
Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.